from the front lines of the green rush. This is Green Entrepreneur, where business owners talk about how they found success in cannabis and how you can too. Welcome, everybody, to the Green Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is John Small. I'm the editor-in-chief of Green Entrepreneur. I hope you are safe and healthy in this difficult and extraordinary time. I have a very special guest with me today. In addition to being a distinguished professor, he is also a Holocaust survivor, having escaped the Nazis when he was only 6 years old. Dr. Itzhak Adizes is one of the world's leading management experts and an international best-selling author. He has written, listen to this, 27 books. I can't even write one book. He's written 27 books that have been translated into a combined total of 31 languages.
36.
36 languages. See, this has even been updated.
Yeah.
His book, Corporate Life Cycles, was named one of the top 10 best business books by the Library Journal. He is also author of, fittingly, a book called How to Manage in a Time of Crisis. Dr. Adizes has taught at Columbia University, UCLA, and was a visiting professor at Stanford, Tel Aviv, and Hebrew universities. I am thrilled to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Sure.
So you are up there in Santa Barbara. As we record this, we are in a lockdown in Los Angeles. Are we also in a... Not a lockdown. I guess that sounds like such a...
I sequestered myself voluntarily because of my age and because I had a kidney transplant, so I have no immunity. So I'm totally secluded now. Nobody comes, nobody goes, and I'm being fed from the outside, from the door. I think this is a blessing in disguise. I will tell you why. And I think maybe this will help other people that are also quarantined. I have been for 50 years lecturing in 52 countries, running from one city to another to give big lectures to big crowds, announcing my books, you know. Whew. And now people, all at once, I'm here closed up, and they discovered life. What I spent all my life was on work. Really, my work was my life. Then I identify something which is an alternative. And this alternative is, now that you have nothing else to do, no place to go, no plane to catch, no lecture to get on the stage, there are several advantages. Number one, I'm discovering my children. I'm discovering my grandchildren. I'm discovering my wife, because there is no place to go but to look at them. I'm discovering myself. Wait a moment, what did they do all this life? Well, you know, when people face death, they review their life and they ask themselves the question, what did I spend my life on? And what was really valuable? And what was it, rainbow, that you were chasing? When you are young, when you are born and you are growing up, what drives you is what you want. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. Then you get educated and you mature. Maturity means control what you want and do what you should do. You know, you should be a good husband, you should be a this, a father, you should be a good employee, you should be a good CEO, you should. And when you force death, you realize how empty is the should, how the should is really that irrelevant. And what you really want was so empty. What do you focus on? What is going on? What is really important? And what is really important is you. Are you together? Do you know where you are, or you're spending all your life running and you don't know where you are running? When I was running, anytime they would start the Christmas songs, you know, Christmas music and the piped in music, I would say, wow, another year's passed. When did another year pass? We were running. We didn't pay attention to time. A friend of mine just told me yesterday, my son, no, we are celebrating 32 years of marriage. I said, whoa, wait. I was in your wedding. It was 32 years ago. Time flies when you work hard. Time flies. And now that we don't have anything to do but just sit down, time is now much slower. And you have time to think and to ponder and to ask you the questions, not what you want, not what you should do, but what is really going on. And what should you do, not because somebody told you you should do it, not because you have some ego trick that you want to do it, but because that is the real thing to do. To get to reality. And I think that's a big advantage. So that's number one, I find out advantage, is finding out family, finding myself. Number two is, I think, The advantages of this coronavirus is that we as a humanity are losing our arrogance. We thought we can conquer anything. We thought that we can manage anything. We can go to Mars. We can go to the moon. We can conquer any disease. We can walk through the rain and not get wet. You know, we really developed a sense of superiority. We can destroy the environment. It will be okay. We will find a way to. And all at once, one little bat in China told her, "You guys are full of shit. You really think that you are everything, but you really are not." And that, I think, brings some humility. All at once, we realize we are not in control, that we really have to be much less arrogant and much less behaving in an arrogant way by controlling and destroying our environment. Just say, wait, what are we doing? This is a rude awakening, and I think a very important rude awakening.
Do you mind me asking how old you are now?
83.
And you're a Holocaust survivor, correct?
Yes, I am.
That's incredible.
Everybody wants to see my day. There is a, now that everybody sees at home, you can watch it on YouTube. There is a movie, How I Survived the Second World War as a child, concentration camp, and how I was saved by Muslims in Albania. The YouTube is called I Want to Remember, He Wants to Forget. So you're welcome to watch it. It's a wonderful documentary done by the Israeli television. And I went back to Albania to discover where I was hiding and how I was saved. It's a wonderful movie.
Oh, I can't wait to watch that.
So when I say, how am I doing? I'm doing fine. As a matter of fact, I'm doing fine. I have time and I'll clean up my emails. And now I'm going to start writing my new book tomorrow, which I didn't have time to do. I always had an excuse why not to. Now, what a wonderful time to do things that I never could do before. Question, what to do? We'll start with an analogy. You like to play golf every Saturday and Sunday. And you were looking forward to the weekend to play golf. And you were getting ready for it. You wake up Saturday morning, and by golly, it's raining. Tremendous rain. Flood. No way you can go to play golf. Crisis. What do you do? Some people curse, are upset, and sit and watch television. Their Saturday was ruined. Wrong thing to do. Wrong thing to do. Now that you cannot go and play golf, go and fix your house. Fix the things you could not fix because you were so busy working out there. Take care of the inside. Find out, you know, that what is broken, what can be fixed. So when the typhoon or the flood is over, your house is in a better shape than you found it before the typhoon, before the rain. Same thing for a company. I said to my clients, look, this is not a crisis, it's a problem too, but it's also an opportunity. And by the way, in the Chinese language, the word problem and the word opportunity is the same word. There is no difference. A problem that you take care of is an opportunity. Why? Because you learn from it. By solving the problem, you became stronger. You learned something you didn't know before. So it's really an opportunity to learn. And an opportunity that you missed and you mishandled turns out to be a problem. They are the same thing. It depends on you. It actually looks at you. I translated that into my books. I translated the Chinese word into English by creating a new word. I call it oppor threat. Everything is an opportunity. Everything is a threat. It's up to you what you want it to be. Depending on your action, a problem can be an opportunity. And depending on your action, opportunity can be a problem. Up to you, my friend. You decide. So now we have a crisis. If you sit and watch television and start fighting with your wife and feel miserable, you just have a problem, my friend. But if you say, okay, now I have a lot of free time. What do I do? Go and fix what is broken. Your company must be broken. You must have problems because if you don't have problems, you've been dead for a long time. Being alive means having problems. Why? Because you are changing. Let me explain that because many people don't understand. A company is a system, no doubt. A system, by definition, is composed of subsystems. You have the marketing subsystem, the sales subsystem, the production subsystem, the human resources subsystem, the financial accounting subsystem. Like a human being, you have the blood subsystem, blood flow, whatever it's called. You have the nervous subsystem. You have the bone subsystem. You have the muscle subsystem. Every system, by definition, is composed of subsystems. Now, when there is change, the subsystems do not change at the same speed. Take a company, for instance, because your audience is all business people. Marketing changes relatively fast. They sit down, they redesign how the product is going to be, how they're going to package it, how they're going to price it, how they're going to promote it. Done. How long does it take for the sales to change and to adapt? A little bit longer. Now you have to re-educate the salespeople, you have to re-reward them, you have to redesign them, reschedule them. It takes a little bit longer. How long does it take production? A little bit longer. How long does it take for accounting to adapt? You should live long enough. How long does it take for human resources to change? Oh, that's really long time. Because of that, when there is change, the company develops gaps. It starts disintegrating. The faster, the accelerated, more accelerated change is, the more gaps that you're going to have in your company, the more problems you're going to have. So problems are a manifestation of disintegration. And if your company has been growing very fast, acceleratedly, you think you're doing very well. Oh my God, our sales are 50% higher. We are doing wonderful. True. Wonderful outside. What's happening inside? Most probably inside you're falling apart. It's called the space syndrome. Expanding on the margin, collapsing at the core. And eventually what's going to happen? The disintegration is going to be big enough to stop you going outside. You will have to turn around because you have a crisis inside. What you need to do is chew gum and cross the street at the same time. What does it mean? As you are expanding on the outside, watch out that you don't fall apart inside. So when you have a crisis, this is a wonderful time to go inside and fix everything that you couldn't do before because you were so busy doing outside.
All right. So look at your infrastructure, all the things.
Everything. Look at your reward system. Look at your organization structure. Look at the accountability system. Look at your sales strategy. Look at your marketing strategy. Look, do we have the right people? Do we have the right training? Look at everything. And by the way, this is an institute that I established over 50 years now, and we work in 52 countries of the world. That's the service we provide. We do managerial audit. We took a company, we checked it, everything I tell you. Let me tell you where your gaps are and what you need to do. Audit, not accounting audit, not financial audit, managerial processes audit. Is your structure right? Are your processes right? Is your decision-making process right? Is your governance right? What is right? Is your reward system right? Is your information system right? So that you know what you need to fix so that you will be growing. Because no company, let me tell you this, unfortunately, you cannot see the picture, should not be growing, you know, diagonally up like this. Oh, we are growing 35% a year. Wow, 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 wow. You will fall. It's only a question when. Why? Because the inside is falling apart. You need to grow and fix, grow and fix at the same time. Watch it. Look at the outside, look at the inside. Look at the outside, look at the inside. Look at the outside, look at the inside. If you have to synchronize the outside integration with the external integration in the market. And this crisis now with coronavirus is a great opportunity to do that. You know, there is no sales, there are no strategic alliances, there are no negotiations, there are no new office development, there are no new market development. You know what you're doing? You're hibernating. How wonderful now to sit down, open the Zoom, have a Zoom meeting and say, all right, guys, what are we going to fix? What are the problems we need to fix? Here is your opportunity to fix, which you didn't have time to fix before. Okay? That is what that little booklet of mine is recommending to do. In other words, don't freeze, integrate. That's why we sleep, Jonathan. Why do we sleep? We sleep 30% of our lifetime, we are sleeping. What a waste of time. Because when you are working, you're disintegrating. You're working very hard. You're disintegrating. That's why at the end of the day, you feel exhausted. So what happens when you sleep? Deep sleep is integration. You reintegrate the body. So when you get up in the morning, you feel refreshed. A company needs to sleep, quote unquote, needs to reintegrate, needs to allocate time in the company in normal times. Not even you don't have to wait for a crisis to do that. In normal times, I recommend you must spend, let's say, from 1 o'clock in the afternoon, small companies especially. I say, okay, you cannot take a day off. I know you're working too hard. Fine. One day a month, we stop working at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And we go away and we sit and we work together, analyzing problems, solving internal problems. Not how do we sell more? How do we market more? How do we penetrate the market more? No. Internally, what do we need to do internally so that we work better internally and do it from 1 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night. so that you have dinner together. Because people that part bread together don't fight as much. And one day a month, you really, I would recommend, go to a motel. Don't do it in the office because the secretaries will interfere all the time. And telephone calls. One afternoon and evening a month is dedicated to solve internal problems of the company. And now that you have a crisis, you don't have to go to a motel. Just get on a Zoom and do
it. Now it's a Zoom. Yeah, you have to social distance. You know, one of the things that I'm dealing with now, and I know what a lot of my readers are dealing with, is just keeping morale up. Because if you're running a small company, you have people under you who are very scared right now and worried. And there's a part of you that knows that, you know, it is uncertain. Everything is so uncertain now. Everybody who tells you they know how this is going to completely play out, I mean, nobody really knows. You have some, but how do you keep people motivated during this time?
Look, first answer is by doing. If you do nothing, your depression is going to increase. By doing something, what are you doing? You're giving them a sense of advancement, of movement. They can see some light at the end of the tunnel. For instance, if we are going to be working how to solve some problem that we have had for years in sales, and we solved it, oh my God, what a relief. And we solved the problem that we have in the budgeting that we've been fighting dysfunctionally for a long time, and now let's solve it once and forever. Oh my God, we solved the problem. Look what's happening. Look what's happening. Like my wife is taking an opportunity of this sequestering, this closing up to lose weight. And she feels good. Oh my God, I lost another pound. I lost another pound because she can focus on something. And if I write my book in these 2 months that we are going to be closed up, my morale is going to be very high. I finished a book I wanted to write for years and I didn't have time. I finally did it. Oh my God. Thank you, coronavirus. So it is doing. Get off your ass and do something. Because when you sit, you will get depressed, number one. Number two, they are demotivated because they're scared. And what are they scared? That they will lose their job. And people are scared of losing jobs. Not everybody has big savings. Not everybody has the freedom, you know, to be laid off. And government is going to support you. Okay, for how long? How much? Can it cover everything? That's what the fear is. How am I going to survive? My recommendation to my client is, don't fire. Cut everybody's salary. I cut in my institute everybody by 20%. Here is what I did. Maybe this will help everybody. Forget accrual accounting. Accrual accounting is for the IRS, for reporting to the government. Let the accountant do that. Cash flow is a king in time of crisis. Cash flow is a king. Do your projections of revenue and expenses. Then do another column. That's projections. Another column, 40% less revenue. Now look at your expenses. Which of the fixed you can cut and which of the variables you can postpone? And now see whether you have a buffer at the bottom. It's not profit. It's really buffer for uncertainty. You need to have a buffer. Then you do, if you have a buffer, do the next one. 50% reduction in revenue. Do the next one, 60% reduction. Until you get to a point when you're getting into the red. Because you cut down at 40% expenses, but you didn't cut and you went to 50% reduction revenue, did not cut when you went to 60% revenue. When you hit a negative, you say, oops, I have to cut expenses more. I told my people that work for me in my institute, we are cutting, including mine, 20% in salary. And if it's not good enough, looking at these columns that I told you about, we're going to cut it to 40%. But I'm not cutting it to the low, low, low paid people like secretaries. I mean, they hardly have enough. So cutting it does not really make a difference for the company, but makes a major difference for them. So look what's happening. Manage with the heart. Manage with heart. Now is the time to show your heart. And I want to tell you about the heart. I want to explain this heart thing. Although it does not pertain to coronavirus, it's important to know. I was asked in November, I was lecturing to 60,000 people in Russia in a big stadium. And the question was sent to me, what is the future of management or leadership? You can exchange the word management and leadership. What an interesting question. Here is what I think. And I write a blog every week. It was one of my blogs was this. When we started as chimpanzees, jumping from one tree to another. The stronger chimpanzee was the leader. Then we became nomadic society. The stronger hunter was the leader. Then we became an agricultural society. The guy with the most land was a leader. What is the common denominator? Muscles. The strongest guy was a leader. Then came the industrial society, industrial economy, industrial age. And what happened? The brain got involved. Now we had to do supply chain, planning, budgeting. Muscle was still important, but the brain came to the play. Now we live in information society. The muscles are gone. What is now important? Brain. Who is the biggest hotel in the world? And they don't own one hotel, Airbnb. What do they own? Information, brain. What is the biggest taxi in the world? Uber. What do they have? Information. What is Amazon collecting? Information. What is Facebook collecting? What is Google collecting? Information. We live in the information society. We live in the brain society now. We move from muscles to brain. But I believe this is on its way out too. Because what's emerging? Artificial intelligence, quantum computers, things which are going to replace the brain. They're going to ask the computer, what should they do? They're even talking in the military that future generals are going to have all the information on the computer, and the computer is going to tell them what military moves to make. Can you imagine that? The brain is going to take over. The computer, artificial intelligence is going to take over. So what is the future of leadership? The heart. The heart. The heart cannot be replaced. So if you're asking me, what should the small companies do? Because they might be running into bankruptcy because of the crisis, because of the turmoil, which is very, the crisis is going to continue, just change its nature. Instead of being medical crisis, it's going to be social crisis, economic crisis, political crisis. It's going to continue, guys, for God knows how long, 5, 6, maybe 10 years. So how are you going to survive business? Manage with the heart. What does it mean? How you serve your clients? Back to the time of a craftsman, when he really felt proud with his product, and he felt proud that the clients would come back and back and back. An example of this, what I'm telling you, is a restaurant I saw. It had a big sign on the wall. We will not feed you the food. We will not give our children. Whoops. If you love me as much as you love your children, I'm your customer for life. How much do you really, truly care for your customer beyond making money? Money will come. Don't care in a way that you will lose money, but care for them and money will come. How much do you really love your product? Steve Jobs was successful because he loved, in a fanatic way, the computer to be, you know, beautiful, friendly, customer friendly. He was really, really dedicated to the product more than anything else. The same thing I say, are you passionate about your workers? Are you passionate about your customers? Are you passionate about your product? Are you in love with what you do? Many people ask me, Dr. Adizes, you're 83 years old. How come you're still flying all over the world? I was in 7 countries in 2 weeks, in September, in October, November, lecturing to 60,000 people. Where do you have the strength when you're 83 years old? I say very simply, I love what they do. When you don't love, you hate. Look at young people. They look young. They look young. Shiny eyes. They look young because they're in love. Look at people that hate. They look old. So if you hate your job, if you hate your customers, if you hate whatever you're doing, you're not going to live so long.
And your business is not going to survive.
The longer you want to survive long time, love. Love will keep you young. So the small companies that are going to go through all this turmoil that are so easily going to disappear, you need to manage your cash flow, no question about it. And you have to manage with love. So one of the things to live with love is don't fire the people unless somebody you wanted to fire for a long time and now finally you had it. Okay. But to fire just in order to save money, wrong move. The way you save money is cut everybody's salary. Everybody should suffer. And instead of working 5 days a week, let them work 3 days a week. Cut, cut, cut. Because let them survive somehow. And don't cut it from the poor people at the bottom. Cut it, you know, maybe proportionately more with the people at the top. And then when the crisis is over, we can go back to the old salaries. No problem. But everybody should suffer. And not some people get fired and the rest are continue to live, you know, like as usual. That is what's going to create the crisis, I think, even more. And the morale is going to go down in your company because you're really doing it for the money rather than taking care of your people. Take care of your people. And especially there's another reason why you should not fire. If you fire them, when the crisis is over and you start revamping again your company, you need the people back. How long does it take you to find the new people, to retrain them, to integrate them with your culture? How long will it take you? It's going to cost you more than what you save by firing the old people, because the old people are your human capital. It's not human relations. It is human capital. That's your capital. That's the knowledge that you gave them. That's what they know the company, they know the customers, they know the product. How long does it take you to get new people to do that? So don't fire. Now, another thing to show, love. Anybody go home unless you're absolutely indispensable. Go home, work from home. And I trust you that you will work and do whatever you can. You know, what is it called? Trust. You know, many people, I consulted to many prime ministers, 8 prime ministers and presidents of countries. And when they have an economic problem, they ask me, Dr. Adizes, what do you recommend to do? And they expected me to give them some econometric, macroeconomic formula of what to do in time of economic crisis. And I look them in the eye and I say, Your Excellency, Mr. President or Prime Minister, whatever you do, don't lose the trust and respect of your people. Because the biggest asset that a leader has is not what he knows, not even what he does, but what he is or she is. Do the people trust you? Do the people respect you? If you lose that, you're dead. They're going to not listen to you. They're going to bypass you. They're going to do whatever the thing is right. You will not be able to manage. Trust and respect is what makes integration happen. And integration is where you get the power from. Disintegration is where you lose power. Disintegration causes to use power. You lose energy to reintegrate. That's a wasted energy, which if you are integrated, you don't have to waste. You can use it to compete with the clients, with the competitors. You know, in Adizes methodology, please go to our website, www.adizes.com, and you will see testimonials of real companies, real presidents of companies that grew from $12 million to $4 billion. And they said, thanks to the Adizes methodology. And what's the Adizes methodology? Keep us together, because when we are integrated, there is no wasted energy. And all that fixed energy that exists, we know from physics, is dedicated to fight the competition. When there is disintegration, we fight each other, we turn our back to the competition, and they eat our breakfast or they eat our lunch. So now is the time not to lose integration. Now is the time to be together, not to lose that morale. By what? Pick up items that we can work together and we can solve together. Next, do your cash flow projections. I would say, depending on your industry, for small companies, I would even say weekly. I would do projections, cash flow management weekly and every Friday for 13 weeks ahead. Don't have to do for the year. You cannot predict the year. You can do 13 weeks ahead. And then at the end of every Friday, you update the next week and add another week. So you're always looking 13 weeks ahead to be sure that you're not going to get it to the red. And if you can postpone payments by just getting your suppliers to trust you that you will pay them. They have to trust you. See, the whole thing is their trust. How much they trust you. The companies that are going to be bankrupt, I believe, are the company or the executives that are not trustworthy. So whatever you do, build trust. Whatever you do, capitalize on trust so you can survive.
This is wonderful advice. I just let you keep going because you're such a font of wisdom that I just, I wasn't even going to interrupt that incredible monologue. Well, thank you so much for taking time during this. And I hope you rest and stay well and healthy and get your food delivered to your door.
And I hope that people, if they like what I'm doing, a lot of books about management, I really recommend. It's a new way of thinking about management. The book that is a bestseller all over the world are 2 of them. One is called The Ideal Executive. Why You Cannot Be One. What to do about it? All this education we're doing to be the leader is bullshit. Nobody is perfect. Nobody, even God is not perfect. If you read the Old Testament, he brought the flood and then he said, oh, I made a mistake. Sorry. Next time I'm going to bring the rainbow to remind me not to make the mistake again. God admits it, that you made a mistake. We need people that admit they're not ideal leadership. What we need is collaborative leadership, teamwork, complementary team, like a marriage is a complementary team. So The Ideal Executive is a book I recommend, and I also recommend my Corporate Life Cycles, Managing Corporate Life Cycles, which tells you which of your problems are normal, which of them are abnormal, and what to do about it, because it depends on where you are in the life cycle. Same problems are different depending whether you are young, whether you're in the prime of your life or whether you're getting old. Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Send me back. Send it to me back, please.
Thank you so much, Dr. Aziz.
Thank you for listening to the Green Entrepreneur Podcast. To find out more about Green Entrepreneur, you can go to greenentrepreneur.com or check out our magazine on newsstands everywhere. Check out our Instagram at Green Entrepreneur. We're also on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and all other social media feeds. If you like this podcast and you'd like to hear more from me, Jonathan Small, check out my other podcast, Right About Now, that's W-R-I-T-E, to get some in-depth interviews into the lives and stories of successful writers, how they got there, what they learned, and what you need to succeed. That's rightaboutnowmedia.com. Until next episode, we'll THC you later.